We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it doesn't take that long again. Go dogs.
Big dogs, little dogs, welcome back to the 100 Sample Podcast. It's your boy Lovelace. I'm here with Foss. I'm here with Trick or Trade. We got Graham Coffee coming on. Fellas, I miss y'all. It's been another week. What's going on?
We rolling. I'm back. I made it out of Columbia unscathed. You know what I mean? Popping my collar, walking out the stadium. You know what I mean? I even left a little early, man. Beat traffic back to the whip. Me and my partner, Big Snacks, went to the game, and had a good time. You know, I was able to see the dogs. You know, do their thing. Sat by. One of my old schoolmates, man, Miss Mary Beth Smart, you know, Kirby's wife. It was good
you
to
sat
good
next see her. You sat next to her?
Yeah. Her and all the boys they got. You know what I mean?
It's did, so it, cool. Did it smell different? Did it smell different to be that close to that much money? Did it smell any different?
Man, you hear me, man? But it's just good old folks, man. You were sitting in that in the little sliver of section they give the Georgia people.
Yeah.
Over there in South Carolina. But it was good, man. Everybody, the fans knew what was up. It was cool to see the sandstorm and all that stuff. And I got me a couple towels that I brought back from that, you know, the white towels that they wave around. And they knew what was going to happen, but they just came out. It was nice to get something to do with your afternoon on, you know, 12 p.m., something to do with your afternoon before you get the rest of your day started. And then, shoot, they start filing out when I did. They would leave that stadium in droves.
Hey, if you go back and watch the game again, man, the third quarter, probably like maybe 7 minutes into the third quarter, there's like nobody up top.
That student section was gone. There were no students in there.
They were gone, man. It was out there. Trey, what'd you do this past weekend, man?
Man, you know, man, watch the dogs play, watch them beat up on some people, man, you know, just out here working for real.
Videos.
Yeah, editing. Man, editing.
Yeah, man. It's funny, I brought up the whole, you know, what did the area smell like? My uncle told me one time, he was living in Tennessee, and he was, he had just moved to a new section. I said, Uncle, what's going on? He said, man, everything is wonderful. I'm out here in Tennessee. He said, I go outside and the air smells so much sweeter. And I said, the air smells sweeter? Like, what you talking about? He said, you don't smell that? I said, nah. He said, Faith Hill lives around here. Air smells much, much sweeter when she's around, along with that money. So that's why I brought that up, man. But it was a good weekend, man. I did the same thing, man. Just watch a lot of football. Got to watch football, right? Watch the dogs. My son's back to playing, so that's exciting. Now the coach want me to coach with him, so that makes it even a little bit better because I'm like, okay, because he wasn't really, you know, doing some things I want him to do. So now, yeah, man, so I'm coaching with him and taking the kids through drills and all that. So he was all excited to be out there on the field. So it kind of like makes everything happy, you know what I mean, when you got football around. Even though my Steelers suck, they got to get the ball out to my man George Pickens. I'm getting a little pissed off.
And crazy thing, he didn't got so mature. He don't even be throwing people up on the bus now. He don't even get mad. He just go with the flow.
Because everybody else is doing it for him. Everybody else is basically saying, look, man, it's either time to switch the quarterback or switch the offensive coordinator. But Mike T got to get it together. I'm telling you, he got to get that stuff together. I'm getting tired of seeing that. That's BS.
You got to score some points, man. You missing T.J. Watt, you know, one of your better defenders. You know what I mean? It's gonna be even harder to stop people. Even harder to get at quarterback. They need to score some points, man. Get it to the dog, man.
Exactly.
Get it to the dog.
And he's on my fantasy team, man. I got him late too, man. I was like, ooh wee.
Well, that's a good thing for him. That's a good thing. So you got him late. That means you already got a couple other dogs already doing some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
When Kenny Pickett actually comes in, you'll be okay.
But I started Pickens the first week. I said, I'm going to start him. Since they said he was going to start.
Yeah.
I was like, how you start the man and you don't give him a rock?
Yeah, Steve Smith moment. You don't do nothing with fat shit out you.
Right.
Hey, before we go any further, the 100 Sanford podcast is powered by the Roll Up Network and our sponsor, Gramco, the leader in Delta 8. If you don't know about Gramco, you should, because it's founded by college football junkies just like you and me. They got things such as gummies, they got the vapes, and various items such as roll-ups and things of that nature. Head on over to thegramco.com. That's thegramco.com. Use the promo code Sanford25. You will not be disappointed. I'm telling you right now, you will not be disappointed. At the same time, folks, anytime you listen to the 100 Sanford podcast, I don't care if it's on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, make sure you like, make sure you subscribe, and make sure you tell a friend who tells a friend. Let's continue to keep the party rolling at 100 Sanford all the way to another national championship. All right, man. So we just had this last game, right? We just had the game against South Carolina. I know, Big Foss, you were talking about how you had an opportunity to walk out of there with your head held high. Cause last show you were talking about, you know, you dipped out, went out through the back door. What was it like besides sitting next to the first lady? What was it like inside the stadium? What was the environment like? And how did you feel really about the dog's performance?
It was dope, man. It was a little bit, you know, it was supposed to just be an 80, but man, it was kind of, that sun was beaming down on the brother, man. So it was hot in there, man. And but it was cool, man. A lot of the dog section people came. My man Pastor Troy came. That's one of my dogs that's been my guy for the last 20 plus years, man.
Nice.
He showed up. Just a lot. I saw a lot of the family. So, because I got my tickets, you know, from, you know, within the school. So around a lot of the family. Yeah, so it's cool to see. It just brought back memories of my family being able to come see me play up there in Athens and stuff and on the road sometime whenever they got a chance. And it was good. It started out just like all the other games, man. You know what I'm saying? Start fast, mm-hmm. You know, on both sides of the ball. And it was just it was good football to watch, man. Good football to watch. Yeah. I like the atmosphere, man. The thing is crazy, man. If they could ever put together like a consistent winner, man, that thing get crazy up in there, man.
Yeah,
it get crazy. It's just the beginning of it, like the intros and like the build up to kickoff is just. It's electric, man, and it was like that for a 12 p.m. kickoff. You know, that's right after breakfast. You know what I mean? That's right after breakfast. I didn't even get the tailgate, really. You know what I mean? So, and they was live, man, live. But then the sandstorm, you know, that's always live up there in South Kakalaki. And so it was good. It's always a nice. It's a nice, especially when you win, and it's a nice venue and atmosphere to catch a game. Yeah, and I'm just glad the dogs came out, you know, with a win, looking good. I have to defer to you guys. I presume we came out healthy for the most part.
Anybody got banged up?
I don't know if any new injuries or anything. Yeah. I don't recall seeing anything new.
No new injuries. You know, just the old, like, Jalen Carter was limited, you know, because his foot and stuff like that.
Yeah, he didn't even start. He didn't even start the game. He was kind of like he was a nickel guy. He was a nickel guy for that game. So they let him rush, and he still 80% of him is
It's still good. 100%.
Man, yeah, man, you can see it. You can see it when he came in. You know what I mean? Like you can see he wasn't his full self, but you could still see that he was still more dominant than anybody else out there. Yeah,
still making plays, man.
Yeah, still the best guy on the field.
Yeah, and I, you know what? I'm really interested to know, and I know UGA is not going to say anything about it, but how long has he really been injured? Because I haven't really seen that extreme burst since the first game against Oregon. I thought, like, maybe for the last couple weeks he's been a little bit slow getting off the ball. But still, you know, he's so dominant. I mean, his 80%, like you said, looks like 100% for some of these other jokers out there. Graham Coffee in the building. What's up, Graham?
What's up, fellas?
Did you bring the snacks, yo? We'll bring the snacks.
Nah, I got my snacking in before, you know, we got a coach on me. I'm trying to look all sophisticated and whatnot.
He's trying to look educated. I feel him.
Graham's letting the cat out the bag. I mean, we might as well tell him, man.
I'm sorry, my bad.
Folks, you know, we're trying to continue the rhythm here with 100 Sanford. You know, last couple weeks we had a couple big guests, Champ Bailey, the GOAT that was on a couple weeks ago. We had A.J. Harris, the five-star cornerback from Alabama, who's 100% locked in dog. Love him to death. And this week, we're hoping here in the next 15 minutes or so, Coach Mark Richt, another legendary figure at the University of Georgia, will be on with us. So, but, Graham, we were just talking about South Carolina. Big G was talking about the atmosphere, how he felt real good. He walked out like, you know, like,
I bet he did.
Like he was a don.
I walked out like George Jefferson, man. I had my strut on, man. You got people over there, and then you got, you know, even before the game, you got people like, man, y'all take it easy on us today. I was like, I ain't got nothing to do with that. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. They knew what was up, man. And you know, but they showed out, man. That stadium, man, back when I was in school, they lost 21 games in a row. And they sold that stadium out every single week. 21 losses in a row. And that thing used to still be rocking. So, you know, it was no different now. I'm pretty sure they didn't expect to win. They probably wanted to play better, you know what I mean. But it was a nice atmosphere. It's always great. It's always a great atmosphere there, especially if you win, though.
Yeah. What's your thoughts, Graham?
I mean, I thought, like, I don't want to compare too much Georgia under Kirby Smart to Alabama under Nick Saban, because it's two different places in time, and Georgia's its own thing and its own program, and in some ways I feel like it does a discredit. But there was part of me that was like, you know, I feel like I'm watching a team that's better than the team that won the national title last year in many ways, and B, just the depth, man, just waves and waves and waves of players coming on the field, you know, guys in the fourth quarter getting third team snaps who were former five stars, and just how they came in and handled business, where it was like, you know, we're almost excited to come into this rowdy atmosphere, and, you know, instead of being intimidated by it or shook up by it, it's like, no, we're excited to shut this place up. And just everything is so level. You know what I mean? Like, everything, there's just no ups or downs. Everything happens as it's supposed to happen. Like, you know, the quarterback's throwing up. He still throws for almost 300 yards. Like, you know, nothing can really ever kind of just throw this team off. Like, mentally speaking, they just seem so locked in. And, you know, it's a challenge to keep a group of 18 to 22-year-olds in that same headspace for months, right? Like, that's the question. Can they keep this up? But from a talent and just mentality standpoint, like, it did feel like, you know, that kind of when Alabama was really at its most dominant under Saban in the early 2010s, where they would just kind of come in and it was all a formality, right? Like, there's no kind of slip-ups. There's no questions. It's just business as usual. It's a question of, are we going to give up a touchdown or not? You know what I mean?
Graham, I got to echo what you said, but I'm going to actually compare it to Alabama. Think about going back to like 2010 when Alabama was really coming into its heyday of really dominating, right? So you're watching Alabama play, but week to week, they weren't putting up the numbers that the new Alabama's putting up. Right. They were just dominating teams and then choking teams out, like George says. And then the scores weren't indicative of like 75, you know, they weren't scoring 75 points. It was actually boring to watch at times for Alabama fans and for everybody else around the nation, right? So I'm talking to somebody and I said the exact same thing. At times, this team can actually bore you, if you could say that, with how easy that they're beating teams, how well they're choking. I mean, they don't make mistakes. They're very consistent on the offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, special teams. You don't have a lot of hiccups. And the only way you beat this team is if they beat themselves. And you got to go back to Alabama. When they would lose, they would beat themselves. It wasn't any time where you were going to find them completely caught off guard against a team. It may take them another extra drive to kind of get going, something like that, like we've seen from Georgia at times. But at the same time, they have such a maturity that is uncanny for this, especially for this era of kid, right? NIL's around. Nobody else is doing it on this level where kids are locked in. The discipline, the leadership, the coaching, and everything is just so consistent.
It's definitely impressive because I didn't, you know, just being there, you know, I got there early, you know, long before the game started, and just seeing the build up, the crowd rowdy, the music, the fans, the chickens, it was typical South Carolina atmosphere, and you know Georgia has a young team, you know, and so I'm wondering like, oh, okay, they feeling it today, you know what I mean? So I'm wondering if okay, how is this team going to react to this atmosphere? And man, they came in and handled business. You know what I mean? It was a business trip for that team. And you got to give it up to Kirby and that whole staff, man. They get those guys ready to go. And, you know, like you said, it's a bunch of 18 to 21-year-olds, more on the lower end.
Yeah.
More like 18, 19, you know what I mean? And those guys come out ready to do what they're supposed to do. And I think it's really a – it's a continuation from last year. You got a lot of voices and presence gone from that team, but they're what they instilled in the younger guys lingered.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And so it's the mentality lingered, and you just got to keep that going, and it's going to almost run itself. You know what I mean?
You know what fascinates me through 3 weeks is – like the offense, you know, I mean, it's prolific and it's putting up points and it's incredibly efficient. I know you guys aren't kind of maybe advanced stat type nerds like I am, but like Georgia had a success rate on Saturday on offense that was the second highest they've had against a Power 5 team this century. And that's an SEC road game, right? Like, yeah, I mean, like, the only other higher one was the 2015 game against South Carolina where Grayson Lambert set an NCAA record for completion percentage. Mm-hmm. But what's fascinating is how easy it all is. Like, no one has even been able to force Georgia to have to throw downfield unless they feel like it. I mean, you go look at that first drive, it's like, you know, short little pass to Ladd for 8 yards because the DB's given a lot of cushion. Screen play to Kyrus, screen play to Ladd, or, you know, like just in around to Bowers, like all these just kind of screens and all this stuff. And I think the linchpin for all of this offense right now is how well they block downfield. Everybody,
man, it is
room. Yeah, it's crazy. Unreal, and I don't know how you
unreal. Never seen it like
that. Screen pass to Jackson Brock took that safety out to his sideline with his thumb
all the way. Yeah, and it's like if you want to stop it, you know, I don't know that there's a personnel answer to it because if you start. Like you saw that long touchdown pass to Bowers when the middle of the field was wide open, and it was because the fake that they ran was the same motion that they did on their little screenplay to Ladd.
They did it with Edwards, yeah.
Yeah, on the first drive. And all of a sudden, you know, the middle of the field's wide open. And so it's like, if you're a defense trying to face this, are you going to take linebackers and safeties out of the middle of the field? Because we know what's going to happen if you do that. Like, this offensive line's going to plow, and these tight ends are going to run seam routes on you all day, and it might be even easier than what they're doing on the outside. So somebody might be able to provide enough adversity to where they try something downfield more often. But, like, right now, like, they don't even have to – just the – there's not that much, like, level – or there's not really, like, a margin for error because – you're just throwing out to the sideline over and over. You're not having to bomb it downfield to be effective on offense.
Can I give you a comparison? I was going to say the New England Patriots.
Under Tom Brady.
We need just to get one. Just doing whatever you want to do all the way down the field. Like, if you really look at when they were really successful on offense, and I'm talking about New England, it was the same thing. They didn't have to take a lot of shots downfield. It was where the open guy is, that's where we're going with the ball. And 100% of the guys playing 100% together at all times. And obviously with Belichick, if you don't do your job, you're gone. Same thing at Georgia. If you don't do your job, you're sitting, right? So
it's crazy. It's almost comical to watch. Like, it's like people are so open. Like, they're so open. And I know that's because everybody's doing their job. Like, there's a lot of running lanes, and I know that comes from all the perimeter blocking. Back to that, man, I've never seen it like that on that level. You usually don't get people invested in blocking like that. Not skilled guys. It don't happen.
I'm telling you.
But they bought into whatever it is, and it pays off. Like, you get rewarded. Like, I counted it yesterday. It's 19 people that have caught a ball. 19, bro.
Yeah.
19. 19 you know different people have caught a ball. And so, you know what I mean? You blocking, and you get to eat, too. You know what I mean? So it's like, everything is open, so I'm wondering who's going to provide some type of resistance to this Georgia team, and I don't know if it's going to be in our regular season. You know, and so, like, who's going to provide that type of resistance, and what's going to be our counter? That's what I'm anxious to see, you know what I mean? I'm really anxious to see what's going to be our counter.
We might not find some type of offensive
adversity. Like you said, we might not. Right now, because right now it seems like Munkin is in a bag that, you know what I mean, that very few get in. And, you know, and like I said, I'm just anxious to find out what happens when it's not all good. You know what I mean? I don't want to find out. But,
well, let's throw this out there then. Because, I mean, we talked about all the good stuff that's happening. But what is anything that has unnerved you a little bit? Going through the first three games, what has unnerved you either on the offensive side or the defensive side? It makes you think, like, man, okay, we got to shore this one thing up.
One thing for me, I'm a stickler, you know, I'm an OL guy, so I definitely like, you know, the run game aspect of playing football. I think we have good backs. I think the order of rotation needs to change a little bit. I think Dejon Edwards needs to be second in line for touches.
Please,
he just makes it happen. He has a knack. He is a yard getter. You know what I mean? So when it's not there, he gets something. When it's there, he gets more. He figures out how to go forward. I don't think Milton doesn't have the wiggle that you want, and he gets tripped up easily. You know, now he's a big kid. He's a load. Don't get it twisted. He can get you 4 or 5 yards, but I need for him to, you know, he's got to hit the ladders this offseason, man. You know, he's got to pick those feet up, and he's got to work on, you know, his elusiveness. You know, he has what he has. He has what God gave him, but he's just not that elusive right now.
Wait, one second, Big Foss. 1 second. See, we get breaking news. Every time you talk, the breaking news comes and a new guy comes on, the guy that's supposed to be on, and we know who's supposed to be on. It's Coach Mark Richt. I'm going to try to bring him in. He's in the green room. So, ladies and gentlemen of Dawg Nation, we have the one and only Mark Richt is on the line right now. Coach, you are joined by Lamar Lovelace, Graham Coffey, Trigger Trey, and, of course, you know George Foster. Welcome to the 100 Sanford Podcast. How are you today, Coach?
I'm doing great. Glad to be on the air with you guys.
Coach, it is such a pleasure for you to be here with us. You know, we've had some great guests recently, but I think you might, you know, you might be the icing on top of the cake right now. I mean, you're that guy that everybody wants to hear from and everybody always loves. So we really, truly appreciate you being on.
Well, it's going to be a good night. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, Coach, before we even get started, I just got this quick question because, you know, you played football, right? So you played the game, but this is going to be off the cuff for you. Were you better than Jim Kelly, Bernie Kosar, and Vinny Testaverde?
Easily. All you got to do is ask me or my mom, either one.
I mean, when you look at those names, it's crazy. You know what I mean? And you're there in Miami. You're sitting behind those guys, sitting in the room with those guys. All of those guys are potential Hall of Famers, Hall of Famers. I'm trying to figure out how come you weren't a Hall of Famer yourself in the NFL.
Well, here's the thing. I got a tryout with my first team I tried out with was the Denver Broncos, and the day I signed my contract, Elway got traded from the Colts to Denver. I lasted about a week there. And the next year I got in camp with the Miami Dolphins and looked at locker number 13 down a couple of lockers down the road.
Man.
Lucky Dan Marino was there, too. So I think I was the fourth or fifth best quarterback in the world at the time.
Coach, I appreciate you bringing it. See, like, I'm from Macon, Georgia, but oddly enough, when I got into football, the Buffalo Bills were really good. So Jim Kelly was my guy. I love the Buffalo Bills, and I don't know if I ever told you this, but when you brought Jim up there to talk to the team one day, man, that was like, I was like a kid in the candy store, man. I appreciated that, and I reminded him of that. I saw him, I went to Seymour's Hall of Fame induction, and he came to Richard's party, and I saw him there and reminded him of that again, man. We got a picture and stuff. It's always cool to see your childhood heroes.
Oh, yeah. Well, my childhood hero was Joe Namath. I mean, there was literally a picture of him in my wallet. There was a picture of him next to my bed. Last thing I saw.
Joe Willie.
Your name's Joe Namath.
Coach, I had an opportunity to meet him one day when I was out in California. It's the same weekend that I met O.J. Simpson and had dinner with him, but that's a whole nother story. But Joe Namath, he was a character. He's a Pittsburgh guy, and I grew up in Pittsburgh, so he's a legend in Pittsburgh.
Well, going back to O.J. Simpson for a second, the year he ran for 2,000 yards, his coach was Lou Saban, who was the coach that recruited me to the University of Miami.
Wow.
The small world. Matter of fact, he had a bunch of recruits at an official visit, and he got O.J. on the telephone and put him on speakerphone to give us a little pep talk while we needed to go to Miami with Coach Saban. So that was pretty wild.
I'm sure he killed it out there on the recruiting trail. There's no doubt about it.
What made you? Where are you from, Coach? I forget that.
Well, I was from Boca Raton, Florida, just an hour north of Miami. Oh, but I mean, Coach Saban, that same Coach Saban, Lou Saban, he convinced me I was going to save the program. You know, be a star quarterback. And I'll never forget looking at the Miami Herald in his office a couple of days before a signing date. There's another quarterback named Mike Rodrigue in the class. I said, what's up with this guy, Mike Rodrigue? It says, Choctahatchee High School quarterback /DB. He said, oh, don't worry about him. He's a DB. I go, well, what about this guy, Jim Kelly from East Brady, Pennsylvania? quarterback no slash next to his name. He looked me right in, the eye and said, Mark, somebody's got to back you up.
The old coach, the coach talk, man. The coach talk.
He had me convinced. I thought it was a good idea. I needed a good backup.
Well, coach, he was a great backup, wasn't he? All time.
The funny thing was, you know, I had my plans. I was going to start as a freshman, be All-American my second year, and win the Heisman in the third year. And the only problem was Jim started living my life for me. kind of blew me up a little bit.
Oh, man.
He stole your plan.
Exactly.
Well, Coach, speaking of which, you know, what drew you to coaching? Because obviously you had to have an additional plan. You had plan A, you had plan B, you had plan C. I mean, what were your plans for life outside of winning the Heisman?
Well, I failed at everything else, basically. I got fired from just about every job I had in between these short stints in the NFL. And the last job I had was a bartender. And about a month into it, they decided I wasn't doing a good enough job and fired me one night. I think it was during Monday Night Football, and said, hey, just sit on the other side of the bar and get a beer and go ahead and watch the ball game. We got a job for you when we close tonight. And then he hired me to clean the bar. And so I was doing that for a minute, and I decided surely I could do something else. Maybe I could try coaching. So that's kind of how I got started in coaching.
What was your first job coaching?
Well, my first job, not many people know, it's not on my resume. It was Pope John Paul High School in Boca Raton. After I got cut from the Dolphins, the coach there at the school asked me to help coach quarterbacks. So I said, sure. I think they paid me like $50 a week or something like that. But we lost every game. We were 0-10, and that doesn't get on the resume. But my first my first college job was a graduate assistant coach at Florida State in 1985, and it was kind of wild. But Coach Bowden hired me, you know, coming from Miami. He was kind of hoping he could get that playbook. You know, he's like, hey, buddy, you got that playbook? that Miami playbook. I was like, no, coach, we're not allowed to take those things with us. And I said, but I got it all right in my brain. And, you know, so anything you need, I got it. But I got a chance to coach quarterbacks as a graduate assistant at Florida State, which is kind of hard to believe now. But that's how I got started coaching.
Also, Coach, I know you've kind of spoken publicly a lot about the impact that Coach Bowden had on your life, and obviously, you know, we lost him recently. But right. You know, that time at Florida State, you know, just a really big kind of a dynasty type run for you guys while you were there. You know, what sort of stands out about working for Coach Bowden and those years in Tallahassee?
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned the success we had. We went 14 years in a row in the top five, and, you know, played about five national championship games and won two of them. But you know, as great as all that on the field stuff was, the thing that sticks out to me the most was the fact that he led me to Christ in 1986 after the death of one of our players that got shot and killed at an on-campus party. Pablo Lopez. George can appreciate he was a left tackle.
I remember the story.
About 6'5", 285, and he was a stud, you know, but his pride, you know, got in the way of his life, really. I mean, he kind of had a kid in the parking lot that about ran him over with his car, and he didn't like that much, so he kind of cursed him out, and the kid got hurt. Got his pride hurt, came back with a sawed-off shotgun, and ended up killing Pablo. And that next day, Coach Bowden had a team meeting and preached the gospel to the boys and said, you know, Pablo used to sit in that seat right there, and he's gone. He said, if that was you last night instead of Pablo, do you know where you'd spend eternity? And I knew where I was going. It was a bad spot. He was talking to the players, but the Holy Spirit was speaking to me through Coach. And the next day, I went to his office and knocked on the door. He said, come on in, buddy. And, of course, he calls you buddy when he forgets your name. And, but I prayed to receive Christ right there in his office. So changed everything for me. Certainly, but I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But my spirit and soul have been made right through Christ. And it's an awesome thing.
Awesome.
Morgan, I got a question for you. We talking about body balance and stuff like that. How do you think his influence and his relationship impacts you throughout the years?
Well, the one thing about Coach is he truly loved God. He truly loved family. He truly loved football. And he cared about us coaches. He cared about our families. I'll never forget, he would say, when are y'all going to see your kids? And the answer couldn't be, he's talking to the coaching staff. The answer couldn't be, you know, Thursday night after practice. He's talking about seeing them every single day. He was, we're either going to come to work a little bit later where you can see your kids in the morning, or we're going to get here real early and leave after dinner, and we go after practice, you can have dinner with your family. But I want you to see your children every day. So we decided to start our staff meetings about 8:30, and which allowed all of us to get up with our kids and take them to school and have breakfast with them and, you know, keep that relationship. So that's kind of how he operated. He loved the coaches. He loved our families. He loved the players, and everybody knew it. And as bad as we wanted to win for ourselves, we wanted to win even more for Coach.
Coach, now I know that you, I don't even know if you could see it, but my screensaver is actually your office, because you're like my favorite coach. Don't tell Kirby I said that, but
okay,
you're my favorite coach. But so you get the job at Georgia. What was that like walking into the University of Georgia? You had just come from Miami, just come from being under a legendary coach in Bobby Bowden. And here you are, you're tasked with bringing Georgia back to where Georgia should be. What was that like as a young coach, you know, just your first big time job?
Yeah, it was, first of all, I was there 15 years at Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there, I was at East Carolina one season in the middle of that. But for the most part, my whole career, I was at one spot. I was at Florida State, and I only knew one way of doing things. That was the Bobby Bowden way, the Florida State way. And so, you know, a lot of guys, when they get their first head job, they've been to seven different places. And you pick a little bit of here, a little bit of there. But for me, it was pretty simple. I only knew one way. So that's kind of how we were going to at least start out. And everything from the, you know, off-season program, George, you know about the mat drills.
I'm going to speak on it. Don't worry. When you get done, I'm going to speak on it.
Okay. Well, I know what a shock it was to everybody's system to do that. But, you know, it was very – that first season when we went to Tennessee and beat Tennessee there and did it in an amazing fashion – where we had the game won, and then they got the ball back through a screen pass for about 85 yards or so.
Right.
It looked like the game was over, and then we came back down and scored just a couple seconds to go to win the game. But we're in the locker room after the game, and I'm trying to settle everybody down and talk a little bit about what happened. And then somebody stood up and said, hey, Coach, we finished the drill. And he's talking about the mantra of the mat drills was – about finishing full speed. You know, every drill we had a finish line, and we had to finish hard. And that's kind of where that finish the drill became a lot more meaningful to everybody. But it was a great moment to win that kind of game, a defining moment for, like you said, a young coach trying to prove he knew what he was doing, and for the staff and even for the players to believe maybe all that hard work was worth it.
Let me tell you now. Let me tell you the real version. Man, it was tough, man. We had a different level of accountability, being asked of us, a different level of, you know, discipline being asked of us. Some of us bucked. some of us didn't understand it. Those mat drills, I had never experienced anything like that. And man, when I tell you I was about to die every day, it was not great for the big guys. We had to do everything the skill guys had to do, but we outweighed them by 200 pounds. and just the way that we had to do things, the way that we had to look, and the way that, you know, I believe that, you know, you eventually adjusted to the times. eventually adjusted to the times, and it was good, you know, and I appreciate you for your time coaching us, because that's, to this day, that's the only championship I have. That SEC championship, that's the only championship I have in all the sports, whether it be little league, middle school, high school, and so I'll cherish that for a long time.
Well, George, you remember the mat drills, obviously. And we brought if you remember, the hot seat we used to have. And right. We got the hot seat, and Boss Bailey gets up to talk to the team before the season, and he started talking about mat drills, how we brought some video to show you guys what it looked like, and we had all them slick athletes at Florida State, and Lavernius Coles and Peter Warwick and all them cats, and they were buzzing their feet, and they looking like they're having a good time, and they're thinking, well, this may not be so bad. And then after a few times they did it, Boss said, y'all are looking at each other saying, dang, man, if we'd have listened to Coach Donovan, we wouldn't be going through this hell.
That's awesome.
Oh, man.
Coach, what was another special moment that you had during your time at Georgia? I mean, obviously there was a lot of great moments as fans, as us following the team and following how, you know, you guys made the transition really to what we see, you know, going on right now. But what was a special moment for you outside of the drills?
Yeah, there's a lot of great moments, but one of the most fun was that time we found a way to get the entire team to jump off the sideline in that Florida game and start celebrating to the point where we got a couple 15-yard penalties, had a kickoff from the 7-yard line. But it was kind of a design. My original plan, my only plan, was that the team on the field would celebrate after the first score enough to get a penalty to get everybody fired up. But when I said I wanted the team to celebrate, they thought I meant the whole team. Which I really didn't mean that. And so we scored. And then, by the way, the night before the game, you know, there had been some individual celebrating going on in practice. And I was like, let me get one thing straight about this thing. I said, it's not going to be an individual celebration. It's going to be a team celebration. And if y'all don't celebrate hard enough to get a penalty, I'm gonna run everybody, right? So, but I'm still thinking the 11 guys on the field. So I said, one more thing. If we don't score till the fourth quarter, we're down by 40. We ain't celebrating. It's got to happen in the first quarter. So sure enough, first drive of the game, we score the touchdown. And all of a sudden, I mean, the whole team goes on the field jumping up and down. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Everybody but one guy, Danell Ellerby. I looked at Danell. I said, well, why aren't you out there? He said, Coach, I'm so deep in your doghouse. There ain't no way to go back. Another thing people don't know is, don't remember much about that play. It was Noshon Moreno. He was like third and one, and he kind of tried to leap in the end zone and reach the ball over the plane of the goal line. they call a touchdown, but that play went to review. If it had been 1 inch short, it would have been 3rd and 31. Man, I don't know if I'd have been coaching very long after that game.
Coach, I was actually in the stands that day, sitting right behind the Georgia bench, and I'll never forget, you know, there was the big crowd noise celebration after the touchdown was scored, and then there was this moment of just kind of a couple split seconds of silence, everyone trying to figure out what was going on, and then this large eruption that was even louder than the cheer for the touchdown after everyone realized, you know, what was happening. But it really did. I mean, like, you look back at the history of the Georgia-Florida series, it feels like it really kind of changed the psyche and the momentum in that series a lot. But also, you know, that team, if I recall correctly, had two losses at that point in the season, and from that point on went on and finished number two in the country. Kind of, do you guys sort of look back at that moment as what spurned that on?
That was part of it. You know, we had the first blackout that year too, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that was a funny deal where, you know, the seniors, George knows this, but the seniors had always come to the house during 2 days. We'd have a meal there and we'd talk a little bit, and inevitably, like, I think back in your day, George, y'all wanted those black shoes.
We did.
We finally got those.
You can tell the story. I don't know if you remember it, but there's a story about those black shoes.
Well, you can tell the story after I finish this one. But but that year we're talking about, the year before the blackout year, the fellas wanted black jerseys. And I'm like, man, I can't just get black jerseys made. Nike ain't going to make them in a month. It ain't going to happen. You know, you got to plan that out a year in advance and all that stuff at least. So I didn't think much about it. And but after that meeting, I got up with Nike to see how, if they could get it done that quick. And they said they couldn't. They'd have to wait till next year. So the next year, seniors at my house did the same thing. Coach, we want black jerseys. Can we get black jerseys? I said, how the hell am I supposed to get black jerseys in a month when I knew I already had them, right? So I didn't tell the players I had them. The only guy that knew was the equipment man and me. The assistant coaches didn't know. So that day that we warmed up in the red, the home red, and then, you know, George, y'all would come in the locker room and turn out the lights and be in the shower area and have a little pep talk and a prayer, and then the lights would come back on. But when the lights came back on that day, the black jerseys were sitting there in everybody's locker. And then you're talking about an eruption. They went nuts. It was like a dang sauna in there. It was so – I thought, like, I just screwed up this game because they were so exhausted from being excited about those jerseys. But sure enough, we came out and beat the brakes off of Auburn that year too. And the fans went crazy. It was just a great moment. What about them black shoes?
Can't hear you, Graham.
Graham, you're on.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah. I mean, like, that was I was a freshman at Georgia that year, but I remember, you know, the entire stadium with Thomas Brown and Noshon dancing the Soldier Boy on the sidelines. The CBS announcers dancing in the box. I've never been in an atmosphere quite like that ever since.
Yeah, we played Soldier Boy till I figured out what the words meant. Then we had to shut that thing down.
Let me tell you about these shoes, black shoes. So, and Georgia always wore white shoes, white and red. That's just this very traditional school. So overnight, I think it was Tony Gilbert, my roommate, and Boss Bailey, I believe. Overnight, they go over to the locker room and paint the whole defense's shoes black. and so they come out the next day of practice with black shoes. The coach comes out there. Coach is livid. He's like, what are y'all? get back in there. And, you know, if you know Coach, you know Coach don't cuss. But every now and then, something would slip out. And he'd be like, excuse my dumbass French. But, but y'all go back in there and put on some white shoes or whatever. And so he made it. So it was like he bust they bubble real good. But what happened was, in the what was the group? Was it was accountability group? It was whatever it was. Right. It was a group of cats, and they meet with the coach, and y'all decided that okay, if we make it to the SEC championship, y'all will get us black shoes, and Nike gave us all black shoes, and we wore those black shoes for the first time, and whooped up on Arkansas in the SEC championship.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
How we got to that point was was pretty funny.
That was cool. Another thing about that SEC championship, I built a swimming pool in my backyard, and I put a heater in it, and my kids are like, when are you going to turn the heater on? I said, look, I said I'd put a heater in the pool. I didn't say I'd turn it on. And I said, here's the deal. If we win the SEC, we'll turn that pool on. We'll turn that heater on. And sure enough, we heated that bad boy up after that game.
Nice.
Now, Coach, you were able to get the team up and running. I mean, obviously the SEC championships and things of that nature. How difficult was it for you to follow, or not even really follow, because you didn't follow him, but really tasked with the job of getting Georgia back to the top? I mean, literally, you're at a great institution. You know, you have to get this national championship. How did you feel about that going into this situation?
Right. Well, I mean, it was a great honor to get the opportunity. You know, Coach Dooley had won the only national championship at that point, and was the athletic director. He's the man who hired me. So, you know, I felt like I owed it to him, obviously. But, you know, it was kind of a God thing for me. I was just trying to be obedient. I really felt like God was saying, take this job, you know. Mm-hmm. And so my goal was just to try to do the very best I could every day, and just kind of trust God with everything else. But it's a great program. It's a great state. There's a wonderful tradition, and the bottom line was, you know, until you sit in that chair of head coach, you really have no clue what kind of weight that's put on your shoulders. And even though I observed Coach Bowden for all those years, and you know, sometimes as an assistant coach, you'll be like, why'd Coach do this? Why'd Coach do that? Or I probably would have done this. I probably would have done that. But the real truth of it is sometimes the head coach knows things that no one else knows. And he has to make a decision that no one else understands. And, you know, a lot of times, even some of the rules I had, George, you know, in the beginning that you said I kind of got up with the times. After a little bit, there's some truth to what you said. You know, certain things really, well, once I lived it out a little bit, you know, a lot of the rules I had were just the rules Coach Bowden had, you know, so I kind of just brought those with me. But over time, I began to think about how important is this rule? Is it really that important? And if it wasn't, I wasn't going to do it. Every rule I had, I wanted to be able to say that I could hold people accountable to, and that it was for a good reason, and that was for the team to have a better chance of winning and for the guys to become better men. You know, that was kind of my goal.
Did you have any regrets?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of regrets. You know, you can't make as many decisions as a head coach makes without having regrets. One of my big regrets when you talk about rules was when Tony Gilbert cut his hair. Remember that, George?
Right. Yeah.
No, we had a hair rule because that's the rule we had at Florida State. You know, hair couldn't be hanging out your helmet and covering up your name tag and facial hair and all that stuff. And it was just a rule that was in the Florida State playbook, and I brought it with me. But it was one of the worst feelings I had when And, you know, Tony, he didn't bitch and moan, and or not to me anyway. And he just did it because he wanted to be a leader, and he wanted to buy in. And it was one of my regrets as far as the rules are
concerned. And I was growing my hair at the same time. We were both growing dreads, and his was longer. And luckily, my front, my top of my hair would not lock up. And so I ended up getting rid of it anyway. I think you eased up because we both grew them the next year, our senior year.
Yeah, I did. I was like, why? I felt really bad about that. I was like, why did I do that? You know, was it really that important? And the answer was this. It's more important what's in a man's heart than what he wears on his head, you know. And that rule wasn't in force after that time. But you know, sometimes you gotta live and learn, you know. But there's some game decisions that I regret. I mean, the biggest one I could think of, my biggest mistake, the second to my last year. Against Georgia Tech, I think it was 2014, Hudson Mason was a quarterback. And Hudson's from Marietta, and so he's an Atlanta kid playing, you know, the Atlanta school. And he puts a game-winning drive together with just probably about 18 seconds to go in the game. Something crazy like that. We take the lead by three. Then I get to my special teams guy. I didn't want him to set up a kick return, so I wanted them to kick the ball. What I wanted was a pooch kick, which is a kind of kick where you kick it high to that fullback back there around the 20, usually fair catches it, and that's the end of it. But I, instead of pooch kick, I said I want a squib kick. And I'm thinking pooch, but I'm saying squib, and my special teams coach is like, you sure you want that? I said, yeah. So we squib it, which is more of a line drive type of kick. Well, the didn't go very far, and it was on about maybe the 40 with 60 yards to go. They run one play, get about a 18, 20-yard quarterback run out of bounds. Then Harrison Bucker kicks a 57-yard field goal to tie the game, and we lose in overtime to Georgia Tech. And you know, George, that's like death. And I only lost twice in 15 years to him, but that one there was horrible. And probably the beginning of the end for me at Georgia, to be honest with you.
We had won a lot of games there, man. You know, can't many people say that. You're one of the winningest coaches ever.
Well, it was a blessing to be at Georgia. And we live right down the street now. We when I moved to Georgia, my wife, of course, my mom, my dad, my brother, my two sisters all moved to Athens. And when we went to Miami after Georgia for those 3 years, everybody stayed in Athens. And
it's a great place.
So after retirement. From coaching, we moved back to Athens. We live right down the street from the university right now.
Yeah, I think all of the former UGA coaches are still in Athens, which is, I guess, a testament to what a great community it is. Because that seems.
Yeah, you got Dooley, you got Goff, you got Donnan, you got me, you got Kirby.
Yes, sir. Yeah,
everyone. That's crazy.
That's rare. Coach, how, you know, I know you're doing a lot with television now and kind of being involved in the game in other ways. Have you enjoyed that experience, and is that something you ever imagined you'd be doing?
No, I didn't think I would, but, you know, ultimately, you know, what got me out of coaching was the Parkinson's that I've got, and I didn't know what I had. Back in Miami, but I just knew I was so fatigued I couldn't do it anymore. And but you know, I did start out with the ACC Network. This is, I think, my third year with them, and I enjoy it a lot. It'd be like me working with George, you know, that big Eric McLean, a big lineman out of Clemson, and Eric EJ Manuel, quarterback out of Florida State, and a guy named Jordan Cornett, who is a basketball player for Notre Dame. He's the host, and we got a show called the ACC Huddle. And but it's just – it's fun working with those guys there. I'm obviously the oldest guy. They take good care of me. And but then there's just – you know, they're making careers of it and doing a really good job, and I'm just kind of having fun with it. So I enjoy doing that a good bit.
Who do you think is going to come out of the ACC this year?
Well, you know, the easy answer is Clemson, and it probably will be. Their defense is, you know, as good as anybody's just about in the country, or probably one of the top five anyway. And you know, their quarterback's been catching a lot of heat, but hadn't had a whole lot of help from his receiving core and O-line. But if they get that mess straightened out a little bit, where they don't shoot themselves in the foot, I think they'll win the league. They got a really good shot of running the table and getting in the playoffs. So, but if they don't, you got Pitt, you got NC State, you got, you know, even Miami's got a shot. The team that's the surprise team in the league this year is Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
We knew they'd have a really good defense, but their quarterback's starting to play really good. And they got a shot at surprising some people, so we'll see what happens there.
You know, Coach, we'd be remiss not to ask this question, because a lot of people really truly believe, you know, kind of going back to your coaching career, had you had the facilities at Georgia where this Georgia program would be and how many national championships you might have, but also NIL, the impact of NIL. What are your two thoughts on that before we let you get up out of here?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been in the building lately, recently, and I had no idea where I was at. I mean, I was like another
planet. me, the coach.
I mean, it's amazing what they've done there and what they're still doing. And it's as beautiful of a facility as you can imagine. There may be some as good, but I can't imagine any of them being better. But so that's that. And, you know, if we had more of this or that, maybe, you know, we'd have done better. I don't know. But, you know, the NIL, you know, the thing I've always said with that is any coach who – because people say, how would I handle it? Well, my answer was you better embrace it as a coach and manage it, you know, the best you can. You know, be the team that is on the forefront of it, because if you don't, you will get left in the dust. And, you know, I got no problem with the players, you know, making that money. I wish you had been that way when I was there, because a lot of people were giving them money anyway, and I wasn't one of those guys, you know. And, you know, that might have hurt us in recruiting at times. And, you know, if all the truth came out of what was going on back in that day, you know, a lot of people would have been in NCAA jail. But nowadays, yes, if that all came out today, everybody'd say, so what? You know, they get it now with the NIL anyway. So, you know, but I don't regret trying to do things within the rules and if you're going to try to teach character, you got to try to live it. And let me just say this too, you know, sometimes people want to put me on some kind of pedestal as far as my behavior, but I still, you know, have my share of stupidity in life, and I still do things I shouldn't do. And you know, I try to do the best I can.
Coach, I can tell you this, I mean, you might be trying to do the best you can, but you're doing it better than most. I can vouch for that. Again, you're one of my favorite coaches of all time, no doubt about it. But before you get out of here, you have a new book out. You want to talk about your book at all and kind of pub that for everybody to go out there?
It's called Make the Call. It's kind of a play on words. As a coach, you got to make a call in the game about every 40 seconds, or as a head coach, it's a lot of calls you got to make, a lot of decisions you got to make. But that's kind of what the book's about. Making decisions in life, and when it comes to football, when it comes to faith, it comes to family. But it certainly will challenge the reader to make the most important decision of all, and make the call for Christ. And so it's kind of a – it's a football book, but I'll say it's an evangelical tool disguised as a football book. You know, my goal is for people to come to know Jesus and, you know, live forever in heaven, you know.
Well, Coach, I have the audio version. I just got it today, but I'm hoping that I can get down there sometime to see you so I can get the physical version, maybe autographs or something, give to the kids.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that.
I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you coming on, Coach. I got one story that I remember about Coach. So this is my senior year, and I get a call that, okay, I need to come to Coach's office. And so I'm like, sheesh. So this is at the end. I can't remember if it's at the total end of the game, end of the season, or right after the Auburn game. The Auburn part of it will make sense in a minute. And so I'm coming up to the office, and I'm like, man, okay, what did I'm trying to think, did I do something? Did I say something? You know, what happened? And so I come in, and you sit down right there. So I sit in the chair across from your office, and then I'm like, dang, what's happening now? And so you grab your cowboy remote. I don't know if you guys know what the cowboy remote is. That's what you control the film with,
right?
You know, and so you grab the cowboy remote, you turn the TV on, and I was like, okay, did I mess up? I'm like, what happened? And you turned on the Auburn game. And the senior, the one that took us to the SEC championship, you turn on the Auburn game, and you start running plays. And I'm like, what's going on here? He said, you were like, you know what, George? I know you was doing it like this because I had that one arm. I was out there slanging cats. I was like, oh, this is a good beat. he was like, I didn't know you were doing it like that. Oh, one hand of them cats, man. But I always remember that, man, because I thought I was in big trouble for something. I had no idea what it was.
And that Auburn game really was one of the greatest moments, too, because it did send us to the SEC championship game, and we won that one, you know, by the skin of our teeth, too. It was a pretty wild finish. But it's great, great moments.
We appreciate you, Coach.
Yes, sir. Yeah, God bless you, George.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, as someone in my early 30s, I grew up on Georgia football. Both my parents were in school there. But, you know, my generation and people around my age never knew UGA as a national contender and an SEC championship contender and winner until you came along. And everything that, you know, has kind of come both during your tenure, but also, you know, the recent national title and all of that really was started with you and George and, you know, what you guys were able to accomplish there in the early 2000s and afterwards. So from all Georgia people, I think, you know, a thank you is definitely in order.
Well, I appreciate it. I enjoyed it very much. And my affiliation with the program means a lot to me. And the Georgia people do treat us very well. We appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Coach. We appreciate having you on tonight. We'll let you get back to doing your fatherly and grandfatherly duties and getting back to your fine family.
All right. Good night, man. God bless.
God bless, Coach.
God bless, Coach.
God bless, Coach.
All right, now.
All right, guys, that was Coach Mark Richt. I thought that was spectacular having Coach on. You know, what are your early thoughts on the interview before we briefly talk about Kent State?
I didn't know Coach was that funny.
Coach hilarious. If you see him on ACC Network, that's when he has a sense of humor. I've always stayed in touch with Coach over the years, but the ACC Network, that put the country on notice about his sense of humor.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to Eric McClain before, and he was saying the same thing, that he's actually really, really funny. You know, when you look at Coach, you're sitting there saying, man, here's this stoic figure, this guy that was on the sideline, the blonde hair, you know, the Christian guy, the Christian coach. And he's like, nah, man, he's nothing really like that. You know, he's like a lot of fun, a lot of entertainment, you know, a lot of stories. And obviously we heard that tonight, you know, especially with yourself, George. You were there in the room. You were able to see things that we haven't seen and bring something extra to the listener that they could understand.
And he talked about things that I kind of figured that I didn't know for sure, but I just figured he did certain things the way he did it because that's the way Bobby did it. Right. And he had to eventually get around to doing things his way. You know, some of the things he brought over to the program were great. You know what I mean? Obviously, you don't win as many games as he won without having a solid foundation. Of course, players, but, you know, the way he did things enabled us to win a lot of games at Georgia. And so it was good to hear his perspective on some of those things.
Well, I find it interesting that they both have a similar career. You know, if you add Georgia's facilities and add a little bit more to the facilities, he has a career that's really like Bobby Bowden, you know, a well-loved and beloved figure. A lot of games that kind of went down to the last seconds, some seasons that turned out that maybe the way that they shouldn't have, that the fans thought would be, you know, turn another direction. But again, such a beloved figure. And I mean, to me, they're similar. They're just very similar. You going to say something, Graham?
No, I mean, I think you're right about that. And I think with Coach Richt, I think, like, because he is such a fantastic human being, a lot of the conversation around him centers around, you know, the things that he's done in terms of, you know, kind of some of his mission work and the impact he's had on some of his former players. But when you sit down and look at the records, I mean, you know, he came into Georgia in 2001, went 18-4, and then it's 13-1, 11-3, 10-2, 10-3, like 11-10 win and 12 win seasons were the norm. And really
13 in my senior year.
Yeah. I mean, like 2007, that team finished number two in the country. If Kentucky doesn't have a field goal blocked in triple overtime against Tennessee, then they go to the SEC championship game. And, you know, I was at that 2007 Sugar Bowl, and LSU was playing for a national title in New Orleans a week later. And the LSU people down there were very honest about the fact that they didn't feel like they would have matched up well with Georgia if they had to to meet them in Atlanta. And, you know, 2012, you're literally a play away from beating Alabama, and I have zero doubts that they would have rolled that Notre Dame team. So you're talking about a coach who, you know, won SEC championships and had all these amazing seasons, but really, you know, if there was kind of a little bit more justice in things, at least one national title ring, possibly more.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way, man. And
yeah, we beat kind of wish that we supposed we beat the Florida team we're supposed to beat, then he probably gets one my senior year.
Yeah. And you kind of wish it would happen for a guy like that's, you know, such an upstanding guy in college football, but just in general, just in life, you know, you kind of wish that he could hang his hat on that. But he's done so much more for, like you said, Graham, for student athletes, the legacy that he leaves with these guys and the memories that he leaves and the lessons that he taught. You know, I think those guys could always go back and say, you know what, I'm a better man having had Coach Richt than anything else. So, but it was a great interview, man. I really appreciated him coming on. Like I said, I'm not blowing smoke. He's definitely one of my favorite coaches. That's why I have that in the background as my screensaver. And that's his office, you know, and I thought he was one of the best that's ever done it. But hey, let's move on. We got the big game next week, or this week coming up. It's not a big game, but it's a big game. It's always a big game for Georgia. Kent State comes into the building, you know, led by Sean Lewis. Anybody, Graham, I know you want to talk about some early thoughts. What are your early thoughts on this game?
I mean, like, Georgia's going to win, obviously, and it's going to
be
a large scoring I think the interesting thing to watch on Saturday is Kent State has a stud receiver, Dante Cephas. He's a kid that had almost
from my high school
yards. Is he really? I saw he's from Pittsburgh. I wondered about that.
Penn Hills High School.
Yeah. I mean, almost 1,300 yards receiving last year, you know, 9 touchdowns. Also kind of rare to have a guy that has a 1,000-yard season like that at a group of five school and doesn't transfer out. So I'm actually interested to see, you know, I think that they can maybe provide some challenges at certain moments to Georgia's secondary. And, you know, I think Georgia is at a spot right now where Kirby said it on the Samford game, right? Like, if the opponent we're playing isn't going to create adversity for us, then we're going to create adversity for ourselves. So I expect Georgia to try to work on the things that the coaching staff feels like they're maybe not doing as well as they could, and probably, you know, put themselves into some 2-minute situations and just try different things out. But I also would just kind of encourage everybody like to enjoy what you're watching. You know, there's been over, you know, there's been almost 120 years now, I think, of Georgia football, and this is, you're in very rarefied air right now. And so as much as a game against Kent State might feel boring to some people, like, I remember times where a Georgia team would have struggled with a Kent State team, right?
So. Facts. What about you, George, Trey? Thoughts on Kent State this week?
We're going to whip them up. I just got a few tidbits. Last time we played Kent State, I was at Georgia. Last time we played Kent State, really? Kirby was at Georgia. Kirby had a couple pass breakups. They had a couple tackles and a pass breakup that game. So it's been a while. So it's been like 24 years since we played them. And the head coach of the Dawgs was a player for the Dawgs back then. I remember they had a player named Eugene Baker, the touchdown maker.
Wow. That's classic.
He ended up playing for the Falcons, I believe. You know, not wasn't that long, but he was a wide receiver for Kent State. But yeah, you know, it's Kent. You know what I mean? Are they going to come in and, you know, it's a home game? You know, people going to get and do a little tailgate and have a little fun, watch a little ball, and get up out of there, and hopefully get up out of there unscathed.
Trey,
healthy.
I just looked up Eugene Baker's stats in college. That dude was a ball
player. He was sick.
1,200 yards in 1996, 13 touchdowns, 17 yards a catch, 1,549 yards in 97 with 18 touchdown catches.
Certified. Wow.
Not against Kirby.
Not against Kirby. We also had Champ Bailey, too, so.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, it's okay. Let's put it back in perspective. Champ had him on lock. What you got, Trey?
Then we're gonna beat up on. I was, like Graham said, and because I knew the wide receiver from a year ago because he was literally one of my first edits I had did a year ago. I'm still in touch with him now. And I feel like it's going to be a good matchup. He already know about the game. He's locked in. I just want to see him and Ringo go at it because we need to see Ringo actually be great and be that guy at corner. So this would be a good test for him. Cause he's gonna be that guy's gonna be an NFL receiver when he leaves. Maybe he's gonna stay. He's an NFL receiver.
Yeah, Cephas can play. He can definitely play. He's actually gotten much better than what I saw. Cause what's interesting is that they don't really run pass the ball a lot at my old high school. They don't do that. It's a lot of running. You know, Western PA is a lot of running. You don't find a lot of quarterbacks coming out of there right now. So, you know, when kids are athletic, they have to go on to the next level and develop those skill sets, but he did develop those skill sets. As for me, go ahead, Graham.
No, sorry, I mean to cut you off. I mean, no, it's cool. One thing to remember that's interesting about this Kent State team is they went and played at Oklahoma 2 weeks ago, and that game was 7-3 at halftime.
Yes, sir. I mean,
they're not a bad football team. And they put up 20 points on the Washington team that blew out
Michigan State.
Right, yeah. Like they can play. I mean, they might win the MAC, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's funny because I did see that, and I did look those stats up and look those things up where I think it's Schley. I think that's Colin Schley is the quarterback. He can throw the ball a little bit. He can run the ball a little bit. I think that's – and it'll be interesting to see what this defense does to kind of corral him a little bit. I mean, they have everybody else. Bo Nix, obviously. Rattler, they did, obviously. But it's another different style of quarterback that's coming in, and they run an up-tempo system at Kent State, so that's going to be another test for the Dogs. But really what I want to see this team do, I want to see them just get better in the trenches. I know George talks about it from week to week. That's where you win, is in the trenches. I want to see this offensive line really, really dominate up front, because I want to see the running game kind of get going. I don't care who's running back one, two, or three. I really don't care. I want to see the running game get going, because there's going to come a time during the season where we need it to get going. I mean, I know we could throw the ball over the field, but there's going to be a time where maybe we're tested, where we got to slow the game down, dominate on the ground, pound people for a little bit, get our defense off the field, let them rest a little bit. And we need to see that starting this week against a team like Kent State, because the following week you got Missouri, you get back into SEC play. On the defensive side of the ball, I really want to see this front four. I want to see them get after the quarterback. One sack, fellas, through three games. Yeah, that's an amazing thing right now, having gone up against South Carolina, a guy like Rattler who holds on to the ball. Bo Nix, we couldn't really bring down. I mean, it's one sack. So I think, if anything, I want to see this front four, this front five, bring some pressure, maybe come out of this game three or four sacks, because it's going to end up helping us in the long run, especially since our secondary has played well enough so far. I mean, with guys like Starks playing well, the corners playing well, but there's going to come a time that we got to get to the quarterback, because we got a little bit more of the gauntlet of our schedule, so to speak, coming up soon. So that's what I really want to see this week. Not only that, they got a guy named Caleb Johns who's got four sacks, and he's actually played well this year for them. I think he had, what, two sacks against OU, one sack against Washington. So he can get after the quarterback. It'll be interesting to see what our tackles do against him this week, because he has been, I guess, really productive for Kent State. But I really want to see this team in the trenches dominate. I think the spread is at 45 right now. I don't know if we cover that spread. Graham, you're more well-versed on this than I am, but 45 points is a big spread against a team like Kent State. And I think the over-under is 62.5.
I like the over-under better than I like the spread, just because I think this offense actually might pose a bigger challenge to Georgia than South Carolina's did last week.
Yeah, I do too.
And I think you're going to see a lot of backups play, so I wouldn't be shocked to see them score, you know, 10 or 13 points or something like that. But I don't know, man. When you're talking about spreads this big, it's all basically on how Kirby is going to, you know, kind of manage the game and how long he's going to leave everybody in. And we know that Todd Monken is not going to pull any, you know, exciting tricks out of the bag for Kent State. So I think it'll be a routine game. And I think, like, you know, Samford was a little different because it was Kirby's former, you know, boss and the guy that gave him his first job. But I don't think that Kirby has any interest in going and, like, embarrassing Kent State. Shane Beamer, different story. But Kent State, I don't think so. So, I mean, will Georgia score close to 50 points? Probably, but they'll do it within the flow of the game. It's not going to be reverse passes in the third quarter or anything like that.
I agree. Well, before we get out of here, guys, let's just talk about one quick game, because I was just looking at the spreads, and then you got Tennessee versus Florida. They're playing in Tennessee. Trey wanted to talk about this in detail because he can't wait to throw out tweets. He got a whole bunch of them locked and loaded. Right now, Tennessee's a 10.5-point favorite over Florida. Any thoughts on that?
The swamp, brother.
Yeah, man, that's real tough. I mean, 10.5. I mean, Tennessee was just giving out McDonald's bags a few years ago and getting suspended and, you know, getting the program.
Well, I could have got one of the McDonald's bags. Could have got a Happy Meal in there.
What are your thoughts on this game, man, before we get out of here?
What you think, Trey?
Talking about
hopefully.
Second coming of Cam Newton. Just know I got y'all a tweet bookmark, and I will be letting off some tweets for y'all, so, because I'm not done.
What you got, Big Foss?
I wish they both could lose, like, really bad, but I probably hope Florida loses worse. So,
oh yeah, always.
So yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
What do you got, Graham?
Yeah. And, like, I know that Tennessee should win. I think they should win by more than 10.5 points. But, like, if there was ever a program that would kind of, you know, trip up in this moment, yeah, like, it's – I mean, Tennessee's beaten Florida once in the last, like, 10, 15 years. I mean, it's been a long time. And there's a lot of anxiety in Knoxville this week. Everyone's worried they're going to blow it. I don't know. I think the Tennessee in the end probably has too much offense, but I could also see just things getting weird. And, like, Anthony Richardson is not a good quarterback, but he is a good runner of the football. And Florida's running game is definitely the strength of that team right now. And that seems to be the weakness for Tennessee's defense, is defending the run. So, stranger things have happened, man. It's college football. But I think it'll be close for a little while, and Tennessee maybe pulls away in the end.
Yeah, I feel the same. Even though I'm going to say Florida, you know, they cover this. What's that, G? I think he kind of.
If Florida gets behind, it could get ugly because they don't have the ability to come back.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. Could they get behind?
Yeah, I don't think they can come back.
Yeah.
If AR getting
dropped back 35 times, it's not good news.
Yeah, see, I think that early on it's going to be tighter than what we think. I just don't know if they cover the spread, 10.5. I think maybe they win by 9, maybe they win by 8. You know, I think it's not as – it's a comfortable game for Tennessee after maybe the second quarter going into the third, but I don't think it's going to be something where Florida really truly has a shot to win this game, especially if the crowd is all into it. It's a 3:30 game. It's a national game. They should be liquored up and ready in Tennessee, ready to go to this game and see this one. It's a big one for them, quite honestly. I mean, they're undefeated. You know, it's an opportunity for them to play a Florida game, a Florida team, and really put themselves in the position to be a bigger game against Georgia. I mean, obviously, they're both undefeated. The winner of that one should probably take the East, if that would be the case. But what's that?
It's not a program-defining game if Tennessee wins, but it's a program-defining game if they lose.
Yeah,
it is.
Facts. Okay. Facts. Because they have the momentum right now as a program to really kind of turn some things around, and especially with a new quarterback coming in next year. Heralded 5-star, but we'll see. All I know is that right now Florida's trash. They got a trash quarterback. Well, did I say that? God dang it! I know we're gonna have some Florida people listening to the show. My bad.
Oh, okay, I see it. E trash. trash. Trash.
I'm glad you said it. So I don't get all those. I don't get all the tweets and texts and messages and everything else. But fellas, it's been a good one. I really appreciate Coach Rick coming on. That was a fantastic interview. Appreciate seeing you boys as always. Once again, week to week. Anything before we get up out of here?
Just thank you to Coach Rick, and enjoyed it, fellas. Glad to be part of it.
Yes, sir. With that being said, as always, see you at 100 Sanford. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com. And email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.